Hi, this is Barry Lister, Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and Management Sciences. You're listening to Science and Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. Analytics professionals, whether they're working at a company or in their own consulting firm, sometimes discover, as if it were a rude shock, that not every business person can converse about math models. If your career depends on communicating with people outside your field, listen up. In today's segment, we talk to Dr. Carrie Beam of Carrie Beam Consulting. At the 2013 Informs Analytics Conference in San Antonio, she gave a talk entitled, Everybody Doesn't Have a PhD, Soft Skills to Communicate Predictive Analytics to the Business Community. Dr. Beam, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you.
You received a PhD from Berkeley, but you didn't go to the corporate or academic route. How did you come to open your one-woman consulting firm?
It was a little bit of a none-of-the-above choice. I decided that I didn't want to pursue a tenure-track professor job, and I had worked in corporate America before I got the PhD.
So you were exposed to it and you knew what it was like.
I had seen it, and I just thought that I would be happier running my own show. So I got on the phone, called a bunch of people, and asked them to hire me.
And the rest is history?
Yes. One of the cold calls paid off, and then from there, it's all history.
And you made you got additional clients, and you found that it is possible to be what they used to call a lone wolf.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do you conceptualize what are popularly described as soft skills for OR experts who might prefer to be analyzing the data rather than explaining it to somebody else?
So the soft skills would be a way to communicate the results to somebody whose background is not in analytics in a way that makes them feel good about the results and also makes them feel good about themselves.
And in your talk, you distinguish between nerd questions and business questions. What did you mean by that?
Good question. A nerd question is very typically an analytics type question. It tends to be brief. It tends to have a mathematical answer. You can often find them in textbooks. They have solution keys. And they're very well understood by the analytics community. A business question tends to be one asked by people with MBAs or with management positions. They tend to be sloppy, they tend to not be well defined, they tend to be subject to vote, and they also tend to be subject to lots of departments within the organization.
And do analytics people expect too much comprehension of data from MBAs who once upon a time took a management science course because it was required?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of my favorite quotes is that we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. And from that, what I mean is, to an analytics person, something like a confidence interval or a regression line or a clustering analysis is second nature. And we'll look at the confidence interval and understand it. To a business person, they may not even remember what the confidence interval means. And it's not because they're dumb. It's because they've been spending all their time on marketing or sales or management.
Right. It's not their specialty.
It's not their
specialty.
And
they're acquainted with it, but that's the length of it.
Yeah. And I think in the analytics community, we need to be very, very careful not to assume that somebody who doesn't know a particular analytics term doesn't have what it takes upstairs. You know, I don't know a lot about pediatrics. That's why I outsource that to a specialist. I wouldn't expect somebody whose expertise is management to know a huge amount about statistics.
So people in our field talk about descriptive, predictive, and prescriptive analytics, and that takes explaining to business people. So for starters, how do you simplify descriptive analytics for a business person? I would guess that this level is the one that's a little bit more easily intuited.
Yeah, so a descriptive analytic is something that people have probably done already in business school. They will often do it in Excel. It describes existing data at one point in time. If you've made a pie chart of what your customers look like, or if you've made a bar chart or a histogram, that would be a description or a descriptive analytic of your data.
And can you give an example of how analytics people go off track and how they can make descriptive analytics more understandable to those outside the field?
Absolutely. One area that people often go off track in is in presenting a histogram. And a histogram, you may remember, is a bar chart that has bars, and the taller bars mean there's more of them. A lot of times, if a bar chart has what we call a long tail on it, there will be a few little data points way out to the side. Typically, you'll see this in the housing market, where there's a whole bunch of houses at the median price and then a few million-dollar mansions. The analytics person will often look at and encompass those in their thought process, and the business person will typically not. They will typically just look at the middle of the curve.
Mm-hmm. So the analytics person should be cognizant of that and not dwell on outliers.
Either not dwell on the outliers, or if the outliers are going to really materially affect the analysis, they need to call special attention to them. And say, for example, most of the houses in this neighborhood are $400,000, but this one is $2 million, so you can't afford any house in this neighborhood. You could just afford many houses in this neighborhood.
And we also talk about predictive analytics. And what are the kinds of predictive analytics a business person typically wants to hear from you, the analyst?
Typically, a predictive analytic is where you don't know what has happened because it hasn't happened yet. You are trying to predict what will happen. Typically, people like to know about churn, which is what is the likelihood that one of our customers will leave us, typically, and go to a competitor. Other times, they like to know about likelihood of purchase probability. What's the probability that somebody will buy something? Sometimes they like to know about price sensitivity. What's the likelihood that at a certain price something will sell?
And sometimes business people can expect too much from somebody like you?
Sometimes they don't expect the right things. For example, if we have a customer and we say this particular customer has a 65% chance of churning this year, i.e. they have a 65% chance of closing their account and going somewhere else, if you wait a year and look at your data, you may find that that particular customer is still with you. And sometimes business people will say, oh, you predicted she would close her account, but she's still here, so the prediction's wrong. And what we really mean is it was just a 65% chance. It wasn't 100%. A better way to understand the 65% is if you took 100 people, all with this risk profile, about 65 of them would have closed their accounts over the year. We don't know which 65, but we do think that it would be about 65.
So your advice then to people in analytics who have to deal with forecasts is to try to give a more rounded picture.
Absolutely, to give a more rounded picture. And anytime you give a probability of something happening, try to give a rounded picture of if it's a 65% chance of closing the account, it's a 35% chance of not closing the account. And also to give it that it's the behavior of a cohort or a population, not the behavior of any one individual.
So that people realize that a forecast is not a prediction, it's not a certainty, it's within, we don't use the word confidence interval.
Yeah, we could
right?
use the word confidence interval. But yeah, no, a forecast is not a plan. Just because it's written in the forecast doesn't mean it will happen. It just means it's what we think might happen.
So we, as you say, we advise a business person not to zero in on individuals, but to look at the group.
Mm-hmm. And also for a confidence interval, sometimes we'll look at the low and the high, and I might recommend formulating a plan for the most likely scenario and then the worst case and the best case scenario.
Mm-hmm. And prescriptive analytics are the real goal, the solid recommendations based on data. What should business people with a little savvy treat as a realistic expectation when it comes to prescriptive analytics?
Prescriptive analytics is the new term for optimization. And for optimization, what you're looking for is to do the best you can under the circumstances. Typically, people are sometimes surprised at what the optimal solution is because it's not what they intuitively would feel that they would do under the circumstances. But for optimizing, for example, optimizing price revenue for customers, just because you would never pay that much money for a particular item doesn't mean nobody will. And so what you're looking for is to optimize price under different circumstances.
So if we're going to turn around and tell business people to have a realistic expectation about what you can prescribe, we would tell them what?
I would tell them that the optimization can be very useful, but also very typically it's a larger undertaking. It might require cooperation from a lot of different departments. If you are going to, for example, optimize your pricing, you might need to change your sales and marketing in order to target your different segments. You may need to change your order fulfillment in order to fulfill your orders differently. You may need to even change the people who print your coupons if that's part of the deal. So typically, an optimization effort involves a large part of the organization. It's not just one analyst with one PowerPoint.
And so in the real world, you're finding what is the kind of reaction that you get when you're hired to do this kind of recommendation?
Well, it's all over the board. In general, we like to hear people delighted, but a lot of times people are surprised. They don't really believe that that's what their data says. And part of it is they either use themselves or they will use anecdotal interviews with customers instead of a full database-wide approach. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they're also very hesitant to test it in that they feel that they might be afraid to not send somebody a coupon if you would need to test out a new pricing strategy.
Mm-hmm. And so turning it around and advising people in analytics, it's kind of like make sure if you're doing prescriptive analytics that you communicate the full range of things that must be done based on your report.
Absolutely. With prescriptive analytics, it's typically just the beginning of a long business implementation. It's typically never just the end of it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's wrap it up and say, what then is your approach to better communications between analytics experts and business people, and do you have any parting advice?
I would say to recognize that business people are wonderful people. They are smart, they are intelligent, and they are very good at what they do, but they are typically not trained in analytics. So to try to understand what they understand and try to know what they don't know and help them fill in the blanks.
So to be understanding and not just speak in your own jargon and realize that there's an entirely different but intelligent person on the other side of the room from you.
Absolutely. Our job is to help them understand their data and to help them look good in the process.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Dr. Carrie Beam of Carrie Beam Consulting. Dr. Beam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.